From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Oh, no, we can't waste time. We have got so much to do. We've got a great show for you today. Comedian Ed Helms of The Office and The Daily Show, the new movie The Hangover. He'll be joining us later to play Not My Job. But first, what a week for news. As you can imagine, it has been crazy around the NPR newsroom this week. Things have been changing very fast, and there will be further updates later today on this station. But as of showtime, Kate Gosselin, star of John and Kate Plus 8, has not yet responded to the latest attack on her character by Octomom Nadia Suleiman. Now, we want to acknowledge, as we wait for updates, the brilliant job our friends at NPR News have done covering this story, the way that Nina Totenberg recreated the back and forth between the two women and played the parts of all 22 babies. And of course, Daniel Schur's commentary midweek when he managed to connect the phenomenon of these uber-fertile women going after each other to Nixon's enemies list. I don't know how he made the connection, but it was amazing. We're so proud. If you have anything to say about this ongoing saga or just want to answer some questions about the week's news, the number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter, it's Mark from Washington, D.C.
Well, what do you do there in our nation's capital?
I work for the Department of Defense as a civilian, and I'm also an officer in the Army Reserve.
Do you bring both uniforms to work, depending on what you need?
I keep a phone box nearby. So
that's important. You can leap into it, change, come out. That's cool. Well, welcome to the show, Mark. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, say hello to a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now. She's performing at the Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, California, June 13th. Paula Poundstone is right here. Next, say hello to the man responsible for everything you might find at Baudette.com, Tom Baudette.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, Mark.
And lastly, you know her from Saturday Night Live, her one-woman shows God Said Hi and Letting Go of God. Joining our panel for the first time, so happy to have her, Ms. Julia Sweeney is right there with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Mark, welcome to the show. And you'll start us off with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, of course. We'll recreate three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, of course. You will have Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. Here's your first quote.
That looks like me. Look at those ears.
That was a tourist this week making a shocking discovery while looking at an ancient hieroglyphic figure in Cairo, Egypt. Who was it?
President Obama.
It was President Obama. Having solved all of our problems here, Obama wiped his hands, headed to the Middle East to solve theirs. His reaction to this supposed doppelganger image on the wall of a tomb was surprising because the wall carving, believed by many to be an ancient prophecy, depicts the big-eared figure defeating an elderly warrior and also a female figure in a pantsuit. But that was just a version. Obama's real reason for going to Egypt was to deliver a major speech to the Muslim world, as was appropriate. He talked a lot about religion. He quoted the three major holy books of the world, the Quran, the Bible, and the Audacity of Hope by Barack Obama. Mostly, though, the speech was about what he called speaking the hard truth. Some thought he went too far with that. Did he really need to tell Bibi Netanyahu that he could stand to lose a few pounds? That was harsh. But the worst part in his harsh truth speech was when he announced to the entire Middle East that he felt the time had come for him to start seeing other troubled regions. All right. Here, Mark, is your next quote.
This is not about going out of business. This is about getting down to business.
That was the positive spin put out by a company that declared bankruptcy this week and became, more or less, the property of the U.S. government. What company?
General Motors.
Yes, indeed. On Monday, Obama announced first that the once colossal General Motors company was filing for bankruptcy. And even better, we now own it. This is a little like hearing that the crazy guy who lives down the street, he's finally been evicted, and he's moving in with you. So, GM has to reinvent itself as a leaner, meaner, successful company. It has to do it while being owned by the American taxpayer, the same group of geniuses that flocked to buy the ShamWow. GM has announced a new plan. They're grasping the challenge. They have announced a new plan to sell well-made, economical, but truly American cars. They're going to buy a whole bunch of late model used Honda Civics and fit them with truck nuts.
Well, now that we own it, we have a vested interest in selling it to one another. Isn't that correct?
You mean like we should go buy
a
car?
No, selling the cars, I'm sorry, the product.
I see.
Yeah, to one another.
So in other words, it'll be like, hi, Paula. Hi, Peter. Hey, Paula. Can I interest you in a new Eldorado?
Exactly.
Something like that.
And then I'll whip out my fabric swatches of upholstery. It's ours now. I woke up the morning after his speech, when we bought it.
Yeah.
Feeling good. Just feeling a lot of opportunity. I've never really had this much responsibility before.
Never owned a car company.
Right. Never had a company at all.
Yeah, it's your first one.
It does get the ideas rolling, though, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking instead of tax rebates next year, they should send out factory rebates.
It's a very good idea. I'll tell you what, I went right out and bought plaid jackets for all my kids. I'm teaching them to say roomy interior.
All right. Here, Mark, is your last quote.
He has superb physical gifts, is a big drinker, and never admits defeat.
That was a former chef. He's one of the few sources we have to leak information about the young man who is now believed to be the anointed new leader of a foreign country. This man will take over from his father as the next dear leader of what country?
It has to be North Korea.
It is. It is. Kim Jong-il, the famously reclusive and crazy North Korean dictator, has apparently chosen his successor, his youngest of his three sons, Kim Jong-un. This proves that a lifelong habit of keeping your head down and constantly praising your father's hairdo can pay off. Now, the oldest of the three sons, it is believed, was passed over, and this is absolutely true, because of his arrest a few years ago at the Japanese border. He was trying to get to Tokyo Disneyland using a Dominican passport. Hello, Mickey. I'm Kim Jong-Ortiz. There's been no official announcement of the succession, but Korean officials have been told to start praising the new guy. And again, this is absolutely true. Observers had noted that North Korean school children have started to sing songs in praise of the new guy. Songs like, school children's songs like, this land is Kim Jong-un's land, it is not our land. Maybe if we ask him, he'll give us some food now.
Where's
were
the
you
reaching
booing?
Out,
I'm sorry,
Peter.
I have to check. Were you booing at the joke or yeah. the singing? Because yeah. it could have been either, I think.
Yeah.
There really, it was a race to the bottom there.
That was a well-balanced boo.
Think. That was good.
A picture of him at age 9. Like, that's the only picture.
That's the only time I've ever seen him, yeah.
I know.
He was educated in Switzerland, apparently, boarding school, and everybody was told that he was the son of the North Korean embassy's limo driver. That's who that guy is, you know. But nobody understood why the son of the North Korean embassy's limo driver could have other people summarily executed. So we're just like, North Korea.
Well, I tried to use his 9-year-old picture to intimidate my 9-year-old daughter.
Did like, it really
look
work?
At that guy. He's running a country now.
What have you done?
He looks about 9.
Carl, how did Mark do in our quiz?
Mark was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Mark, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
All right.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, first up, an economy story. Tim Geithner went over to China this week. He addressed a group of students at Beijing University. He assured the assembled students that the billions of dollars China has loaned the U.S. are absolutely safe, a great investment, no problem, and the audience reacted by doing what?
Laughing.
Uproariously, yeah. Funniest thing that I've ever heard. It was all told an embarrassing visit for Geithner. First, he assured the audience that the U.S. assets China owns, basically everything, if you can imagine, from California east to Des Moines about, All those assets are perfectly safe, and the audience laughed more than drunk frat boys at a Dane Cook concert. Then, and this is true, a teacher at the school brought out a photograph of Geithner taken during his days as an exchange student there at Beijing U, with a female student who was supposed to be a really big friend of Geithner, and Geithner couldn't remember who she was, not even when he was told her name, not even when the student appeared on stage holding a baby that strangely had Geithner's tall hair and worry lines and also hadn't paid any taxes.
I was amazed at how they came back at him after that, because then he said, well, we're just basically too big to fail. So basically the U.S. is GM now to China.
Yes. And then presumably...
You mean China might take my company?
No, I'm sorry. And you've only had it for a few days. I'm sure you're
terrible. I'm feeling so good. I got little business cards and everything. I can't believe I'm going to have them all done in Chinese now.
Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Hattie Hill in Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, Hattie Hill?
Hattie Hill.
That is a great name.
Thank you.
That is fantastically old-fashioned.
Yes, thank you.
Well, what do you do there?
I am a translator.
Oh, excellent. That's great. What do you translate?
A lot of stuff for the Canadian government. And
what is it?
Wait a minute. Are you translating from American into Canadian?
French into English.
French into English, I see. Okay. Well, yep. That's great. Well, Hattie, welcome to our show. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Hattie's topic?
You're not the boss of me.
Kids, as we parents know, you can't control them. You can't sell them on Craigslist. Turns out they won't let you. This week we heard a story of a classic kind of rebellion. Youth saying to his or her, their elders, get out of my way, pops. Our three panelists are each going to tell you a story of young people rejecting authority, only one of which is true. Figure out that one, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail or whatever it is you use. Ready to go?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right, let's hear it from Tom Baudet.
Princeton professors Calvin and Indira Hennessy, the first couple of theoretical physics, had high hopes for their gifted son, Ivan. His eighth-grade science project predicted the existence of quarks, and he completed his undergrad work at MIT by the age of 19. But something changed when the young Hennessy took a summer job at a Lowell, Massachusetts hardware store. He delayed an internship at the Hadron Collider in Geneva until just this week he lost it altogether, sending shockwaves of bad publicity through the theoretical physicist community. Ivan appears little affected by the fuss. I can't tell you how fulfilling hardware is for me. Theoretical physics is a fine distraction, but this place is packed to the ceiling with applied physics. You hit something with a hammer, it reacts. You work out the time-space distortions of a black hole, all you have is chalk on your fingers. We don't understand him anymore, said the professors, who admit they cannot effectively change a light bulb. He sent us a 3-page letter last week proving the utility and endless adaptability of PVC pipe. They've got 5 doctorates between them, and our stock boy gets more done in a day, countered Ivan. You can't fix a toilet with a theory. You need a plunger and a wrench.
A physics prodigy being seduced by the world of hardware. Your next story of teenage rebellion comes from Julia Sweeney.
Biologists in Guatemala have discovered one of the strangest, most surprising cases of adolescent rebellion ever in beetles. Science has long known that adolescent agouti dung beetles living in large colonies are not allowed to reproduce by the elder bugs. Only beetles reaching maturity are allowed to mate, while juvenile bugs are sent out of the nest to collect the dung. But a study team from the University of Wichita noticed that in one nest, the teenage beetles were collecting a type of fungus and rolling it up into the dung, feeding it to the elder beetles, and the fungus had a narcotic effect. The younger beetles were then able to mate to their little beetle heart's content, while the dazed elders wandered into the colony walls. Quote, it's sort of like a dung beetle beach party movie, said entomologist Camaro Powers. Scientists say they've never before seen this kind of adolescent rebellion evolve so quickly and are worried it might spread to higher animals like us.
Adolescent dung beetles figuring out how to get their parents all drunk and stuff on dung. The last story of a rebel with or without a cause comes from Paula Poundstone.
Every baby bird leaves the nest, but only some fly back by to spit the worms at it. As a toddler, Ocel Hitatoris was chosen by the Dalai Lama, who believed him to be a reincarnation of a spiritual leader. He was put on a throne and worshipped by Tibetan monks. He is known as Laba Tenzin Ozel Kinpochi and is revered by the Buddhist community. Buddhists speak of the peaceful meditative countenance he had as a baby, but as it turns out, his thoughts behind that countenance may have been about football, television, and girls, which now at 24, in an interview with a newspaper in Spain, he complains he was denied. He claims the only movie he was ever allowed to watch was Eddie Murphy in The Golden Child. He has denounced the Buddhist order that elevated him to guru status, which is not very nice at all to Eddie Murphy.
All right, here are your three stories of rebellion from Tom Baudet, the prodigal son of physics geniuses deciding he wants to chuck it all and go work in hardware. From Julius Sweeney, a bizarre rebellion noticed in a species of dung beetles in which the young dung beetles learned to drug and therefore evade their elders. And from Paula Poundstone, a reincarnated lama of Tibetan Buddhism deciding to chuck it all and go chase girls. Which of these is the real story of rebellion?
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
I'm not.
Well, as usual, they all seem equally implausible. But you know what? I think I'm going to have to go with Julia.
Julia. Your choice is Julia's story of the rebellious dung beetles of Guatemala. Well, we spoke to someone who, of course, was familiar with the real story.
Evidently, he decided that he did not want to be a Tibetan Buddhist lama or be involved in a kind of monastic institution.
That was David Germano. He's professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia. He was talking about the rebellious Tibetan Buddhist lama reincarnation. Doesn't want to do that no more. He wants to see other movies besides The Golden Child. So I'm so sorry, Hattie. As you have no doubt figured out, it turns out that Paula, in fact, had the true story. You did not win, but you earned a point for Julia on her very first time out by being
Yay.
So convincing in the story. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you for voting for me.
And thank you, Hattie, for playing our game.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today? Kids!
And now the game where we ask famous people about obscure things. Ed Helms is, of course, a former correspondent on Comedy Central's The Daily Show. He is a star of NBC's The Office, and he also stars in the new movie opening this week, The Hangover. But more importantly, he is the world's second most important banjo-playing comedian. Ed Helms, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you.
Delighted to be here.
Let's go right to the stuff people most want to hear. You do, in fact, play the banjo.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm something I've loved for a very long time, and I've been wrestling with it my entire life.
Are you trying to wrestle it into submission, or?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that sort of increases your social isolation.
Yeah.
Or I suspect someone might take up the banjo if they just were really angry at their spouse.
There you are. So in Hangover, the movie that just opened this weekend, you're missing a tooth. And,
yes.
And it turns out, we were fascinated to discover this, that this isn't special effects. You actually don't have a tooth.
That is true.
A single tooth? You don't have a single tooth?
Well, when I was, I don't have any teeth. Again, I go, that's because I'm a banjo player. When you pick up the banjo, yeah. You have to hand in your teeth.
Exactly.
No, I was born without a right lateral incisor.
No.
Yeah. So, I had a baby tooth, but the adult tooth never came in. So, when I was a teenager, I got an implant. And which I had for 20 years, and then for some reason, I I just mentioned that it I happen to have an implant. And
come
then,
on, you tell everyone this story.
So what's amazing is you were just ready to, as you say, the role was written, he's missing a tooth, it's a plot point, and you were ready to go. Do you have any other natural deformities that will be useful to you in future roles? Is it that you have a peg leg and someday there'll be a pirate script that will show up?
Well, I do. It's weird. I do have my left hand is a machine gun.
And of course, back in elementary school, the kids used to mock you once. And now look, I wanted to get back a little bit to the roles you're most well known for. It's The Daily Show, and now in The Office. Is there a way that you can describe the character that you've played? Is it the same guy? Is it a consistent thing?
I tried to inject a certain sort of stupid earnestness into my work.
I've built my career on that. Yeah. As well, yeah.
Well, you sort of continue this in The Office. Isn't your character in the Office, like everybody else in that show, a lot less smart than he thinks he is?
Yes, exactly. My character on The Office, Andy Bernard, doesn't have a poker face. He wears everything on his sleeve, but he doesn't think he does.
Right.
He's totally transparent, but he thinks he's stealthy.
Right. Is there any kind of research that you need to do or life experience that you can bring to play people who are dumber than you are?
Well, I guess I appreciate the assumption that I'm smarter than these characters.
Yeah. Of course, you could have just said, well, what do you mean by that?
Right.
And then we would have known it's true, I guess. So.
Those, especially Andy Bernard, he's a guy that I ultimately sort of feel sorry for, which is how I find a lot of affection for him as an actor.
There's sort of pity going on.
Yeah.
One of the things we've noticed about The Office, we've heard about it, is, you know, the way it's done as a faux documentary, meaning that the idea is that the camera can go anywhere. So you guys are often on set pretending to work in this office while they're shooting scenes around you, right? Isn't that how it works? Because you're always popping in on the background.
Absolutely.
And have you, I mean, we've learned, for example, that one of your co-stars in the show, she just spends all day shopping online. But what do you do when you're sitting there at your desk? And you're not in the shop, but you might be at any minute. How do you amuse yourself?
I read banjo blogs.
No.
I swear to God.
Really?
I sift through bluegrass websites and.
What are the entries on banjo blogs like? It's like day 48, still alone. I mean, what? Now, one last question before we go to the quiz. We saw you in Letterman, and you did your amazing Tom Brokaw impersonation, which is really stunning.
Thank you.
Can we hear a little bit of it? Because we mentioned it now.
Sure. The Israelis have once again launched an all-out attack on the Palestinians.
That's amazing.
I also do an Al Gore.
Well, that's what we heard. We want to just get to this. We heard that you do, and I don't know how you come up with this, a gay Al Gore.
Right.
And we really want to hear that for once in our lives.
If I were elected president, I would make absolutely certain that patent leather stiletto heels came in men's sizes.
Well, Ed Helms, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Oh, no! It's L-shaped, and it's coming my way!
This week, as I'm sure you've noticed, because of all the spontaneous street demonstrations, it was the 25th anniversary of the classic computer game Tetris. So we're going to ask you three questions about that addictive game. That's when we have to arrange the falling bricks so they don't pile up all the way to the top. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's Voice, and their home answering machine, which is more than anybody ever won playing Tetris. Carl, who is Ed Helms playing for?
Ed is playing for Anthony Lewis of Portland, Maine.
All right, ready to go?
Let's do it.
First question. In addition to being the single most popular video game of the last 2.5 decades, Tetris has achieved many other landmarks, including which of these? A, the National American Chamber of Commerce cited it as having reduced American productivity more than any other single cause. B, it led to the longest prison sentence ever given for playing a video game, or C, it inspired a new officially recognized disease in optometry, Tetris Eye?
I'm going to have to go with B on that one.
You're going to go with B, the longest prison sentence ever for playing a video game. You're correct.
All right.
The longest prison sentence for ever playing a video game was 4 months. It was handed down to a man who refused to turn off his Tetris game when his plane was coming into land at Heathrow Airport. Despite the instructions from flight attendants, they put him in jail for 4 months. Next question is very good. Tetris has triumphed in other areas of the culture as well, including which of these? A best-selling series of Russian novels about a kid who's recruited to be a spy because of his Tetris skills. B, the Tetris theme song, as arranged by none other than Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, was a top 10 pop hit in the UK. Or C, Ashton Kutcher has agreed to play the lead in a planned movie version of the game.
All right. I don't think B or C are very plausible.
You don't think the Andrew Lloyd Webber Tetris theme song?
By elimination, I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with the novels about the Tetris hero in Russian. No, actually, it was the Tetris theme song. It was a pop hit.
What?
It's true. In fact, here is Andrew Lloyd Webber's arrangement of the Tetris theme song as heard in the British charts.
I know you're going to dig this.
There you go.
Wow, that took me back to my Broadway days.
I'm sure it did. Now, the last question is also about that song, that tune you just heard. Believe it or not, in the original version back in Russia, it had lyrics. The Tetris theme song had lyrics. Which of these is an actual excerpt from the lyrics in translation? A. Oi, my crate is so light, the strap is no longer cutting into my shoulders. B. We fit together like an L piece and two squares. Or C. Here comes the advancing army in many bright colors to conquer us with joy.
Here comes the advancing army in many bright colors.
That's the one you're picking?
I think I'm going to go with C, yeah.
I'm going to go with Here Comes the Advancing Army in Many Bright Colors to Conquer Us with Joy as the lyrics to the Tetris theme song. It was A. Oi, my crate is so light. And strap is no longer cutting in my shoulders. You see, what we know is Tetris Theme A was actually an old Russian folk song about a traveling salesman who falls in love, and he was referring to the bag of stuff that he carried around with him.
Now, I mean, how does the word oi translate?
It's oi, you know, it's like oi.
I mean, is it the same in
it's
Russian?
Oi. It's the same in Russian.
English?
Actually, I think actually in Russian the original is golly, but it's translated. No, it's oi, like oi, my crate is so light. That's really, I'm not kidding.
All right.
We got it from Wikipedia. It has to be true.
Oi.
Carl, how did Ed Helms do on our show?
Ed needed at least two correct answers to win for Anthony Lewis, but he had just one correct answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, Anthony.
It's all right. Ed Helms is starring in the new film, The Hangover, and, as you know, he plays Andy Narddog Bernard on NBC's The Office. Ed Helms, thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
It was great to have you. Take care, Ed. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Julia, while it has yet to be determined if cell phones do in fact cause brain cancer, doctors are reporting a new ailment caused when users clutch phones to their ears for too long. They're calling it what?
Vibrating ear syndrome.
That's a problem, but it's not what they're calling this. It's not so much the ear. It's, you know, you're holding the phone all the time, you know, you're walking around.
Split focus syndrome.
No, that's a problem. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What? No.
Not sorry. That.
No, though, that's a problem. It's kind of like what tennis players get, but they don't have the cool excuse of playing tennis.
Tennis elbow?
Yes, it's cell phone elbow.
Cell phone elbow.
Yes.
God, I'm the worst.
Doctors are now saying that cell phone users, some of us, are causing permanent damage to crucial nerves in our arms by holding the phones to the ears for too long. Causes intense tingling and numbness in their arms and hands. In severe cases, surgery has been necessary to correct the damage, CNN reports.
Wow.
And why would they lie? Doctors say cell phone elbow can be prevented by wearing one of those obnoxious Bluetooth Borg-like headsets, but that has been known to cause cell phone fist to the face. In extreme cases, cell phone knee to the groin. So, Paula, a major legal decision in the UK this week. The Supreme Court of the United Kingdom there has decreed that now and forever, what?
They made a legal decision.
Yes, they did.
And they said, now and forever.
We shall decree that can never be challenged again. Force of law.
That something can never be challenged again.
Hadn't heard about this one?
No.
Try to give you a...
Yeah, give me a hint. Give me a hint.
It has to do with Pringles potato chips.
They are the crunchiest.
No.
They can't be sold in those canisters anymore because it's a nightmare for a recycler.
No? Does anybody know?
Yes.
Yeah, Julia?
What? They are a snack. They're not a snack.
They are?
Not a snack or a
they're
snack.
Not a snack. But in fact,
because
the high court has determined that Pringles
potatoes.
They are what? What are Pringles?
They're not, they don't have enough potato in them.
No, they do because they are, in fact, potato chips. Now, you might be asking, why did they care? It's because in the UK, food is exempt from value-added tax, VAT, but potato chips are not. So it's more or less a $100 billion question. Are Pringles potato chips, or are they a tax-free savory snack? And the issue has been litigated and ruled on twice before, bringing up technical legal questions such as the concept of, quote, potato-ness. Imagine that being discussed by bewigged, solicitors. But the High Court dismissed all of Procter & Gamble's arguments against defining it as a potato chip. They said, much as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart famously said of obscenity, quote, once you pop, you can't stop.
Did they have witnesses?
Like somebody running in at the last minute and going, I will testify.
Mr. Potato Head ran up the center aisle.
That was my father. You're very dramatic.
Murder.
Mister, you can't handle the truth.
By the way, this is not the only snack-related legal ruling this week. A U.S. district court, this is true, dismissed a complaint filed by a woman angry to discover that the crunch berries in her Cap'n Crunch are not actually berries. She realized this after the crunch berries she planted in her garden failed to grow into crunch bushes.
If it turns out Mr. Crunch wasn't really a captain.
No. Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. Or you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. You can also, this is so much fun, check us out at Twitter. To find out if our lives are as mundane as you imagine them to be, answer, yes, twitter.com/waitwait. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this?
My name is Matt Bowling. I'm in Dayton, Ohio, truck driver.
Oh, you're a truck driver in Dayton. That's great. So yep. You're traveling all over the Midwest?
Actually, I travel all over the United States plus Canada. I just happened to get home yesterday, and so here I am.
Welcome home. What is your least favorite city to drive to?
Chicago.
Yeah, everybody says that.
Sorry.
No. The reason I ask is I was anticipating that because I've heard that from other truck drivers, how much they hate our fair city. Why is Chicago so awful?
No one sleeps. I mean, I don't understand. It seems like all they do is travel all day to work and travel all day back so they can turn around and head back the other way.
No, it's basically if you look at the traffic patterns of America, to get from any point in America, like northwest coast of Oregon, all the way to like Miami Beach. Wherever you're going, from wherever to wherever, everybody has to go through the intersection of State and Madison in downtown Chicago to get there. And it's absolutely maddening. It's crazy. Well, anyway, welcome to the show, Matt.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's
Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
At airports, we'll think you're a threat if the back of your shirt is too wet. It's malicious intent, not a blocked ceiling vent, that causes the bad guys to...
sweat.
Indeed. We all know. Sweat. We all know that sweaty armpit stains are a fashion crime, but now it looks that they might be an actual crime. According to the U.S. military, weird expressions, funny walks, and heavy sweating are indicators of, quote, possibly suspicious and harmful intent. So to identify these individuals at airports, the Army is hoping to develop a light, portable, biometric sensor that can detect, quote, abnormal perspiration and changes in body temperature in travelers, the sweatiest of whom are a lock to be terrorists. The sensor is still under development. The new screening methods are already having an effect at certain airports, as can be seen from last week's arrest of the notorious radical extremist, Richard Simmons. I always knew he was up to no good. Here's your next limerick.
Okay.
When I see several sharks in a huddle, I think they must smell a blood puddle, but they don't want grub, just a good belly rub. Yes, some breeds of shark just love to...
hug.
Oh, it's you're right in that it's the right thing, but a word you might call, you might use for hugging that rhymes with huddle and puddle is...
cuddle.
Yes, cuddle.
Sorry.
It's all right. That's fine. You went for the more modern free verse limerick, and I think that's cool. You want a pet that you can hug and cuddle but won't shed on the furniture? Try a shark. According to keepers at Britain's Sea Life Center, some varieties of shark can be trained to come when called, roll over, and even enjoy being cuddled like an adorable plush toy that is also nature's most perfect killing a machine. The scientists used colored boards, training sticks, and sounds to alert sharks when it's feeding time, at which point the sharks hurry over and affectionately rub their noses against the training stick until they're fed. Some sharks have learned other adorable pet tricks, like running to fetch the severed hand of the previous trainer. Here is your last limerick.
Okay.
Our officials are going for broke, and a happy response will evoke. And in Japanese, they'll say, "Take my wife, please." We shall train them to tell a good
joke.
Yes, joke. Thanks to Japan. The word bureaucrat may soon be synonymous with comedy genius. More than 100 transport ministry officials got on-the-job training as stand-up comics this week because nothing livens up a budget meeting more than a boss who thinks he's Shecky Green. According to a member of the ministry's personnel division, quote, "By experiencing comedy routines, we hope they can learn more about how to speak to clients and how to manage their staff." Changes in the ministry's attitude are already apparent when the opposition party charged that the ministry had misspent tax money. The newly trained official countered with, quote, "That's not what your mother said last night." And then adjusted his tie. Carl, how did Matt do in our quiz?
Matt had 3 correct answers, Peter. That means he wins our prize.
Well done, Matt. Congratulations.
Great. Thank you very much. It's great. I love the show. Listen to it all the
time. Thank you so much. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Julia Sweeney and Tom Baudet each has 3 points. Paul Poundstone has 1.
I see. Oh, don't you doubt her. Oh, you can go ahead. She thrives on that. She totally thrives on that. All right, Paula, you're in third place.
Just playing possum, that's all.
Luring them into a false sense of security.
Precisely.
Paula, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. GM announced this week that it would be selling a blank to a Chinese company. It's your company, Paula.
Hummers.
Hummers, yeah. Speaking to a gathering at the National Press Club, blank admitted there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11.
Dick Cheney.
Right. As of Monday, U.S. travelers need to show a blank or equivalent to return home from Canada, Mexico, or the Caribbean.
passport.
Right. Tens of thousands of people showed up for a candlelight vigil in Hong Kong to mark the 20th anniversary of China's crackdown in blank.
Tiananmen Square.
Right. During an interview on national TV, the mayor of Zagreb in Croatia was shocked to learn that his plan to host a reunion concert with blank was impossible.
The Beatles.
No, Freddie Mercury and Queen. After Sacha Baron Cohen's Bruno character crash-landed on his lap at the MTV Movie Awards, blank did reveal he had been in on the joke.
David Bowie.
No, Eminem. Chicago blues giant blank died on Wednesday at the age of 80.
Coco Taylor?
Right. In an attempt to study the origins of laughter, scientists in Great Britain have been blanking.
Going to Japanese businessmen meetings.
No. Even more dangerous, they have been tickling the feet of gorillas. And not just gorillas. As reported on NPR, scientists at the University of Portsmouth tickled the armpits, palms, and feet of 22 apes in all, had them rolling on the floor with laughter, just like humans would. According to one scientist, quote, "It seemed to me that the subjects enjoyed the attention and did not show much attempt to leave when the tickling session was over," unquote. Which got to be a problem later on, actually, when the scientists started getting texts from the gorillas saying things like, "Why you never call?" Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 11 points, and Paula has the lead.
Well done, Paula. That was very good. We have flipped a coin, and Julia Sweeney has elected to go second, so you're up next. Fill in the blank. Investigators began collecting debris from the Air France flight that was lost hours after taking off from blank.
Buenos Aires.
Actually, no, it was Brazil. 2 U.S. journalists were arrested and brought up for trial in front of the top court in blank.
North Korea.
Right. On Thursday, retailer blank announced plans to hire 22,000 new people this year.
Filene's Basement?
Oh, you wish. Walmart. After coming in second on Britain's Got Talent, blank was hospitalized for exhaustion.
Oh, that woman.
That woman.
Oh, the woman.
Whose name is?
Susan?
Susan?
Oh, is that right?
Yes, but
oh,
Susan.
Susan. Susan Patterson.
No.
Susan.
No, it's Susan Boyle is her name.
Oh, Boyle.
In an interview this week, former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich said he was moved as he watched his wife blank on a reality show.
Eat a tarantula.
Exactly. While playing with reporters in the Rose Garden, blank attacked a reporter's fuzzy microphone cover.
It's got to be Beau.
No, it was Joe Biden. But no, it was Beau. Melvina Dean, the last survivor of the blank, died at age 97.
Oh, the Platters?
No. No.
Nice.
The Titanic.
Oh, the Titanic.
She was a 9-month-old baby when that great ship went down. A principal in El Paso, Texas, has filed an assault charge over a supervisor's blank.
Hairy chest.
No. Over his missed high five. School's superintendent, Lorenzo Garcia, was celebrating state test scores by giving his school principals high fives. But when he came to Principal Mary Lechuga, the high five went awry, turned into a head tap instead. Lechuga immediately, as anybody would, filed a police complaint, saying she feared what Garcia might do next because, as everyone knows, a high five is a gateway gesture. Could lead to neck rubs, Indian burns, and noogies. Carl, how did Julia do in our quiz?
Julia had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. Ooh. She now has 9 points, but Paula Poundstone still has the lead with 11 points.
All right. So how many, then, does Tom need to take it away from her and win the game?
4 correct answers.
All right. Here we go, Tom. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. In an audio tape released to Al Jazeera this week, blank accuses President Obama of waging war against Muslims.
Osama bin Laden.
Yes. Although the Organization of American States lifted its 47-year-old membership suspension, blank said it will not rejoin.
Cuba.
Right. Conan O'Brien's debut on blank was met with high ratings and mixed reviews.
Tonight Show.
Right, best known for his role in the long-running TV series Kung Fu. Blank died in Bangkok on Thursday.
David Carradine.
Right, Forbes named Angelina Jolie as the world's most powerful celebrity, knocking blank out of the top spot.
Oprah.
Right, after changing from his winter tires to summer tires, a driver in Switzerland headed out on the highway only to have blank.
Oh, I know this. They all 4 fell off.
Right, simultaneously. Boom! Yeah. Here's a weight tip. News you can use. Wheels are far more effective when attached to your vehicle. The driver in Switzerland discovered the importance of having the right lug nuts the hard way when he ended up sitting in the middle of the highway with all 4 wheels spinning off into the sunset. It's all right. The right front tire got there and said, oh, he's going to be late. No one was injured. The driver did file a complaint against lug nut manufacturer, the Acme Corporation. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
Well, Tom had seven correct answers for 14 more points, giving him 17 points, making him this week's champion.
Thank you.
Bravo. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict Kim Jong-un's first official act as the new dear leader or beloved leader or fearless leader of North Korea. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, How Tomorrow Moves. The National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Acton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now panel, once he's in charge of North Korea, what will Kim Jong Jr., as we like to call him, do first? Julia Sweeney.
His first act will be to use all of the speakers that are in everyone's home in North Korea to whisper new kimchi recipes he's come up with.
There you go.
Including one that he learned in Switzerland with Gruyere cheese.
Ooh. Tom Baudet.
In an ominous move for his brothers, he will rename his entire family. He will become Kim Jong-il. His older brother will be Kim Jong-seriously ill. His oldest brother, Kim Jong-terminally ill. And the dearly departed dear leader will be Kim Jong-dead.
And Paula Poundstone.
Flintstone vitamins will now contain one little Kim Jong-un.
Well, if any of that happens in North Korea panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Julia Sweeney.
Thank you so much.
Thanks all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week at Millennium Park on Chicago's lakefront. This is NPR, National Public Radio.